Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again to the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. I'm your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and in just a moment, we'll be joined by our co-host, Catherine Ironwood of LuckyMojo.com in Forestville, California, and ConjureMan of ConjureManConsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. This week, we welcome a special guest, Miss Miranda of MissMirandaTarot.com in Minneapolis, Minnesota, bringing us today's topic on campground magic. They will take your calls and offer advice to address, ameliorate, and remediate your questions and problems about love, money, career, and spiritual protection using traditional African-American folk magic practices of hoodoo conjurer root work as divined and prescribed by the greatest spiritual hoodooists of our time. You can learn a lot just by listening, but if you're selected from among those who signed up at the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and called into the show, then you'll be on the air and receive a free consultation. We'll be going to the phones in just a moment, but first, let's catch up with our co-hosts, Catherine Ironwood and Conjure Man. Kat?
Hi. Well, today's topic has got me singing, and I just posted the song in the chat. It's Campground Magic, sing this song, doo-da, doo-da. Campground Magic all day long, oh, doo-da day. So, we're going to be doing campground magic. I just got my brain shuffling around to the 19th century. things here at Lucky Mojo are going swimmingly. We just got in the most beautiful shipment of Queen Elizabeth roots we've had since COVID. I think something happened during COVID. It was there was like a shutdown. People not growing. It takes a long time to grow Queen Elizabeth roots. You can't just grow them in a summer. And, you know, something happened, and they were not available. And we were making do, and we got kind of funky ones. I mean, they were not rotten, because you can't make a Queen Elizabeth root rotten, but they didn't have that scent that you know and love. They didn't just perfume the room that they were in. And I just want to give a big shout-out to Nikki Wilson, our office manager, co-office manager with Eileen. She found a source in Greece, of all places. And we're like, oh, my God, they're going to come all the way from Greece. Will it be any good? Will we be ripped off? And she plunged, and she got many pounds of them. And, oh, my God, we're back in the Queen Elizabeth root business. And it's been a while since we've had some this beautiful. We've had them, but not like this. So, folks, if you need Queen Elizabeth root, small, large, extra large, we've got them. Same prices. It was a little higher to get them, you know, cost a little bit more, but we're okay with that. We just want to pass these out into the community. They are the most beautiful, and Shiva said, "Will they have bugs?" for those of you who know the history of botanical pharmacies, there are several roots that are very inclined to have bugs. John the Conqueror, not one of them. But Queen Elizabeth and Angelica root are prone toward bugs. And Angelica, much, much more than Queen Elizabeth. I mean, it's like Bug City out there with that stuff. But no, when we got them in, Nikki put them in the dehydrator. She said, she put them in the dehydrator because when you do that, the bugs come out. They hatch and they come out. No bugs came out. They were bug-free. So they've been dehydrated. And although they were already dehydrated, but the scent is so sweet. Phyllis Margaret Gabor in the chat said, "It is on my Lucky Mojo list, so just twist my arm." Oh, yeah. Just buy a bunch of them. You'll just stick your head in the bag. I mean, just there's nothing. These are really, I mean, seriously, we haven't had any this good since the end of 2019, and that's been a long time. And I thought, you know, it would be something that would, you know, go away, you know, like we'll never have good Queen Elizabeth roots again. But Dr. Shiva posted, you could almost eat them. Well, that's true. If you wanted to eat a sort of female-scented perfume that smelled like your grandmother's bathroom soap, yeah, that would be. They really, Queen Elizabeth is a fixative for other perfumes. It is also used in medicine, and you will find it on the tarot card of temperance growing next to that nice, beautiful archangel because it is a healing root. So we celebrate Queen Elizabeth today, the late, great, old Queen Elizabeth I, I believe. Okay, so that's all that's happening here. Oh, and our little mini spell kits for Pride Month. People are coming in off the streets and buying them. We said it would be limited. Now, we didn't say how many. We're limited in time. We're only making them for the month of June. They are really, really nice. They're cheap. You get an altar cloth. You get lavender or pink candles. You get a rose quartz or rhodonite stone. You get a lavender or pink candle and a little star candle holder. Make of it what you will. We just got in a shipment of fantastic Paisley Pride bandanas to use as altar cloths, and Nikki has already made another four of them and put up, and we'll have a photo of those real soon. We were using some that were pink with skulls and roses, but these are more like vibrantly rainbow colored. So really, really great things, these mini spell kits. They cost $15. You'll love them. All right, we have a winner for our Facebook Fridays contest. And this winner is someone whose name I'm going to try to say correctly. I'm guessing, I mean, she's been a customer for a long time, and I know her name, but I don't know how she pronounces it. Tracy Simonic, or maybe Simonic, or maybe Simonic? I don't know. But anyway, Tracy, you know who you are. And she won the Seven Circles of Dominion Command, Control, Compel Bath Crystal Pack. And this contains seven, that's why it's called Seven Circles. It contains seven bath crystals. Do as I say, domination, influence, essence of bend over, commanding, controlling, and compelling bath crystals. And she wrote a very nice note. You know, when you enter this contest, it helps if you write something that's like coherent in the English language. And she wrote that she loved our art and was looking forward to us someday doing a coffee table book of the art of Lucky Mojo. And who knows? Maybe we will. It's not outside the realm of possibility. We don't have a winner yet for Hoodoo Psychics because Deacon Millett is just come back from his vacation. We're going to catch up on all of the Hoodoo Psychics contest winners next week. But we welcome Deacon Millett back. We communicated with him today, and he'll be back on the job tomorrow. So, but we like to always make sure that we announce the Hoodoo Psychics winners as well. And the only other things that are happening here is I've started a new project. Well, no. After 30 years of dropping a project, I've restarted a project. It must be some sort of Saturn return thing to where I was 30 years ago. I started a project of with Deacon Millett of scanning all of the Will's cigarette trading cards of the Lucky Charms set, which are 50 cards. In the meantime, we've gone on with to publish them in black and white with Gregory Lee White, Papa G, and I putting together a book called How to Use Amulets, Charms, and Talismans. And that book consisted of us taking those color chromolitho pictures and black and whiting them. So they're all in that book. I had to rewrite some of the text because some of it was archaic and some of it was too long or too short, and I needed to make them all work out the same. So I did a moderate editing on the original text. But 30 years ago, I had promised myself I was going to put them all online, and I got, I think, seven into the 50 of them, and then I stopped. And Deacon Millett had made the scans for me. That was back in the day when you made these little tiny GIFs that were like 80 pixels wide and 120 pixels tall, because that's all you could do with a dial-up modem. And now we have beautiful scans. Nagashiva is cleaning them up. We're scanning the backs, the fronts. We got everything together. And my patrons are going to get this as an advance. Now you're going to say, hey, but those cards, I can go buy a repro set of those cards. And they did reproduce them in 1997. And everybody should have the repro or the original. You can get them from the London Cigarette Card Company. They're online. But what you can't get is my commentary on them. So I do have something to contribute after all. And the guy who did those cards was never credited. And I have since pretty much thrown my hat into the ring as an authority on the subject. Why not? I've been in the book business all my life. The guy who did the art and the text was Thomas Pavitt, and his wife Kate Pavitt probably helped with the text. He was a jeweler and a designer. And he did theosophical jewelry and Masonic jewelry and advertised it as such in the Occult Review. And it's very obviously his art. All of the pictures are of charms and talismans from the British Museum, except for the Zodiac, which are original designs by him. So there you have it. That's what's going on with my patrons. They're getting a one-year advance on this. We're going to be pumping them out. When we're all done with that, we'll go on to something else. But it's nice to say that I've lived long enough to complete a project I started 30 years ago. Not many people say that. So, anyway, I hope I haven't bored you all. Now, what's up with you, Conjurman?
Oh, not much of it. You know, the book news is and the project news is something that I definitely sympathize with. Not 30 years, but I'm very familiar with doing a project, setting aside for some time, and then having to revisit it or coming back to it. And it's sometimes that happens, right? Like, you just need time away from a project or from research or whatnot. I'm not in a research mode, but I have been playing around with my books all day today. As I generally talk, as I've mentioned in the past on the radio shows, I generally end up with, like, piles of books, because I read multiple books at the same time when I'm researching or just for various work that I'm doing. And so there has been piles and piles of books that have been adding up over the past several months. And so today I decided I'm going to start putting them back on the bookshelf. But I think I made my problem worse, because as I was sitting down, I was reading something like, oh, I still need to read this. So I set them aside. And so rather than decrease my pile, I think I've increased my pile of ongoing readings right now. But that's what I've been doing all day today. And I'm determined that at least by tonight, I will have put away half of these books on bookshelves. We'll see, though.
Wow. Okay. You know, we are very literate people. You and yeah. I, book collectors, and me with my trading cards. People in the chat are commenting about the trading cards. Hey, Maganda said, I brought my brother a set of the Wills astronomy cards back from my first trip to the UK. There are other Wills cards and other cards by Ringer and Biggs. If you all go to yourweightandfate.com, you'll find a section on ephemera in the directory, and you can click on that, and it'll talk about cards, and you can see all of the trading cards that Shiva and I have scanned and transcribed the backs. Why do we transcribe the backs? You can show a photo of the back, but why do we transcribe them? So that Google can read them, so that they become now part of literature. And that's important to understand. They're not just ephemera. They really are literature. And these trading card sets, the 25-card sets and the 50-card sets, are really small illustrated books. They would be coffee table books today. So, yeah. Now, you put me to shame, though. My books are in piles, Conjurman. My books are
that's
in
a sign. It's a sign that they're loved, is what I'm told.
it's a sign that my back is giving up, and I just don't want to lift 25 pounds of books and put them back on the shelves. I could always buy another 25 pounds of books from some rare book dealer, put them on the shelves, and leave the ones on the floor. The ones I love the most are on the floor, you know.
Readily accessible, so you can reach over and read them.
Well, yeah, and I'm sitting right here, and I'm looking over to one side. I'm going to actually tell you, what do I see? I see Mules and Men by Zora Neale Hurston and Folk Beliefs of the Southern Negro by Newbell Niles Puckett. I see a hypnotist casebook by Alex Erskine. Oh, my God, this is from another project I never finished. The Complete Hypnosis Bibliography. Here's Methods and Uses of Hypnosis and Self-Hypnosis by Bernard Hollander. Damn. Yeah. Well, I have another stack probably that are on the floor that I just said, I'm tired of bibliographizing. But eventually I'll get back to them. You know, I start, you know, we always joke about how we're all Tauruses around here. But I do have Gemini rising. I may be one of the more unreliable Tauruses you'll ever meet. All right. But I do come back to it. That's the thing. Well, today we have a guest, and I want to talk with her. So our guest today is Dear Miss Miranda.
Welcome
to the show, dear. She's been our guest before, and we're always glad to have her. So how are you doing today, Miss Miranda?
I'm doing all right. It's very warm here in the Midwest. We've had a lot of rain, so suddenly it's very hot and sticky, and it reminds me a lot more of New Orleans than it does Minneapolis.
Hot. Well, I've been watching those weather reports. I mean, you guys are under some sort of ungodly Venusian weather there or something. It's going to be all terrible.
It'll be hot and awful. Yeah, I'm really not looking forward to it. And my garden, my core garden, is going to suffer a bit. So trying to run errands today to get everything shored up.
Yeah. Well, you brought us a topic which is interesting to me, if you don't mind my just digressing a little bit here.
Very interesting topic.
Yeah, campground magic. Now, camping is something that's much more common among families that are only one generation or two generations removed from agricultural life. Once a family has lived in the city for a long time, that family doesn't usually go camping unless they're wealthy and have a, quote, summer home, or unless they belong to a group that has a group camp.
Oh, did we lose Kat, or did we lose me?
Yes.
Yeah, we can't. Okay, yes, we can't hear Kat. Oh, no. Right as she was getting into this very interesting topic.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was getting
into
it. I'm going to
go reconnect her
hopefully
now.
Okay, so we'll get her to reconnect. I'll jump in just real briefly and say that I find this a very interesting topic. I'm fascinated. Both you and Doc Murphy bring us some very interesting topics. And I think some of the topics are shaped by sort of regional concerns and regional interests and regional practices. So like campfire magic is not something that I've done a lot of. But we certainly do have a little bit of it. And I think there's something about the environmental, situational components of thinking about what do you do when you're in a campfire, what do you do when you're camping, that allows you to really think about the imaginative aspects of root work and hoodoo and conjure and magic. And it speaks to the fact that the folk magic that we all study is shaped by regional concerns, is shaped by regional environmental factors, right? Like going camping or being at a campfire. I think Miss Kat is back. I think I heard some clicking.
I'm back again. Thanks. That was abrupt. Okay, so what I was saying in my pedantic and tutorial way is that camping still retains a lot of power in the middle of the country, but not in the big urban areas where you have a metropolis that stretches for hundreds of miles, even across state lines. There's not a lot of camping because there's no place to go that's nearby. Many of our clients, my clients especially, come from families that did grow up in a rural area, but they have moved to the city, sometimes right after World War II, sometimes in the 60s, and these people have become what I call landlocked hoodooists. They no longer know where there's a river. They no longer know where there's a railroad track. They don't know where there are trees. And they live in these concrete warehouses for human protoplasm. And their hoodoo becomes increasingly attenuated and more devoted to candle magic and things that can be bought at a grocery store or bought online. So to bring up campground magic for me is a sort of a wake-up call for people who don't live in the country but will at least go camping. And if you've been thinking about all of the tropes that hoodoo is natural magic and it's so practical and it's so folkloric, but you haven't been out in nature recently, you wake up a moment and just think, why have I not been out in nature lately? Why have I not gone to a river? Why haven't I gone to the sea? Why haven't I gone to the woods? Why haven't I gone hiking? Because if you think about it, people who prize hoodoo, they want all of these beautifully grown herbs, those beautiful Queen Elizabeth roots that came all the way from Greece. But are they growing iris flowers in their garden and drying their own Queen Elizabeth roots? We used to do that until I wiped out a whole bed of irises doing it, and I decided I really had to go to a professional orris root grower because I couldn't supply the need. But I started Lucky Mojo growing all my own Queen Elizabeth roots. So when you think about campground magic, what we think about is making a deliberate choice to go to a place where you can be in nature. Now, it could be city park magic, but I like the idea of campground magic because it's more private, it's more remote, and it's also usually in a pretty place. If you look at the picture that we posted as the ad for this show, that's a some random campground. I believe it's in Canada. It's in Alberta, Canada. But it's just, it could be a campground anywhere. It's just a nice little woodsy area with a picnic bench. This one has a what looks like a steel grill for cooking foods. And there's little stones that outline your campground area. In the back, you can see what seemed to be probably sanitary station, you know, a place where you could wash and go to the bathroom. And most campgrounds have those because they don't want people pooping in the woods, you know, not so good for the, right, you know, for the next camper. So what we're going to talk about today is how to do some of the older forms of hoodoo that do require being in nature. And so I'm going to bring Miranda suggested this. I'm going to bring her in. So Miranda, tell us what campground magic means to you.
Well, I kind of want to add on a little bit more about the landlocked hoodoo and just, you know, people in general who want to get reconnected with nature. There's a really large wave going across the United States right now for a lot of people who love van life, you know, RV living, or even there's now campgrounds that just have tiny little cabins on them. I actually go to one here in Minnesota that has a shower and a toilet and a kitchenette, but they still have a campfire, like fire pit outside. There's a lot of ways for people to dip their toes back into nature and I think get reconnected with it. And I think for me, even not going that far from my city, but just driving, you know, 2 hours, it already feels like another world. And I think also, like, you know, the original television is the campfire. It is something that is capable of really entertaining and bringing people together. So I think once you're provided those options, it kind of changes your mindset a bit. And I think it also changes how you see magic. And you see everything around you, you're just a little bit more aware. And there's also a lot of things you can forage. There's a lot of things you can experience. So I think that camping is allows that. The other thing I'll say is that even if it's not camping, hiking, walking in parks, there's so many good trails nearby, and so many cities are reclaiming areas to make green, or have like bus routes. I remember living in Hong Kong, I could get bus routes to all the places that I'd go hiking or camping. So there's a lot of availability in areas, you just have to look for it, or, you know, rent a car with a friend and get out of town for a little while.
So there was a little thing here. We're talking about classism here in a way, and I'm not trying to put anyone down, but the talk about van life, and I also said that, you know, that these people love, they're YouTubers and they love camping and they love van life. Those people are usually from a fairly privileged position. Some of them want to become YouTuber influencers, but and they can go you or me can say, I'm going to drive 2 hours and go to a campground. But there are not so many, you know, single mom caregivers stuck in Detroit who go camping.
Yes.
And so we need to talk about where hoodoo came from, who created it, and how their hoodoo has been impacted, and how maybe they should join the middle class and start going camping or lose what their grandparents knew about hoodoo. And I hate to say this. I mentioned this several times, that a lot of my clients don't even know which way the moon comes up or the sun. And they are African-American root workers, but their root work has become more and more confined to things they can buy online or buy in a grocery store. And this is hurtful to me because I feel like a thread of something beautiful is being lost. If camping will bring it back, that's great. But there are a lot of Black people who feel that they would not be welcome at campgrounds and would be in a vulnerable position because of racism. And especially a lot of the claiming of outdoorsism by white people with guns is a little scary. So I'm trying to open this up in a way to say, if you are Black and listening to this show and you feel like, wow, this is something that's, you know, this is something white people do, at least think about going back to the town where your grandma still lives. It's at least a rural area. But also think about city camping. Think about going places where you feel comfortable, because I know there's a lot of racism in the world, and one of the things that racism does is to stake out territories and say no X whatever type of people are allowed here, no Jews are allowed at this country club, no Blacks are allowed at this campground, whatever it may be. So try to find a way to get back in touch with nature. I feel I have to say that. I know I sound like a Marxist. Guess what? I am a Marxist. Okay, so we'll just stop right there. No, I'm not really a Marxist. I'm what we call Marxian, but that's such a fine distinction. Most people won't know the difference.
I do want to add in there that I put a link in the chat, and I'm sorry, it's a really long link, but the getaway cabins are in almost every, I don't want to say every state, but across the United States. They are 2 hours. They're located 2 hours from most cities, most airports. That's kind of the rules. And while they are not cheap, it's essentially a hotel room. It mm-hmm. is a safer place for people of color, people who practice other religions. They have a very important policy on the safety of others. So I would just add that they, it's a corporate company and it's essentially a hotel. But if people wanted to try something out in a safer way, dip their toes in that idea, the getaway cabins, I've been very pleased, and they're ADA accessible. So I think that's
great.
Another thing that's really
thank
important.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for bringing that in. And the
link
is there
important.
For anyone who wants. Yeah, that's really good. Well, now let's assume that, you know, classist culture, racist culture, and all of that aside, let's assume you decide to go camping and want to know how to do hoodoo or any kind of magic, folk magic of whatever culture, in that campground environment. So I'm going to break this down into four types of magic. This is based on classical magical theory, earth, air, fire, and water. The campground has all four things. Of course, it has earth, there's land, there's rock. It has air, lots of fresh air, and it has the fire, the proverbial campfire, if it's allowed where you are. Now, I'm in California, and some places do not allow campfires. So you have to be careful, or you have to have a special fire pit or a special fire permit. Around here, not recently, they haven't been allowing a lot of fires. But depends, if you live in a place where it rains regularly, that you can have campfires. And then water. Not every campground has water. There are campgrounds in the desert and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But many campgrounds are situated near streams, rivers, little riparian creeks, and environments like that, maybe a pretty waterfall. They often have a focal point, something that's important that makes it a campground, big trees, a big waterfall, mm-hmm. Placer gold mining, whatever it is, you can do it, hiking. So earth, air, fire, and water. And so let's talk about that. Okay, so give us an intro to what kind of magic. Just pick one of those elements, Miranda, to start us down the path.
All right. We had a great discussion on Thursday, so I have a lot of notes that I that I wrote up. It's always awesome talking. So I'll start with Earth, because we did write down a couple of different things here. I would say that one of the things that draws me to parks, even if they're in the city, let alone camping, is disposing of spell work. You can bury completed work or spell remains in a park or a land that belongs to no one. That was something that Ms. Kat actually made very clear. Mm-hmm. Like, the land that belongs to no one, which is, you know, state parks, national parks, or you could also look at the Land Bureau. It's the Land Bureau Management, I think. It's like something like that. But they have a website where you can find lands where you can find out who owns it and who doesn't. And that's a great place to leave and to bury spell work. There's also something that I think is great about using the earth is if you have to leave spell remains in a existing hole in a tree or in a dead tree stump, this is one of those great places where, like, you can see a lot of that kind of nature not far off of a trail if you're hiking or something like that. So there's a lot of good possibilities there. We also talked about collecting rocks from your locations that you visit. Do you want to go into that, Ms. Kat?
Yeah. I'd like to talk about that. One of the beautiful things about camping is it takes you out of your environment and maybe out of your watershed. When you study maps, one of the most important things to understand is watershed bioregions. They can be large, they can be small, but in a topo map, and you can see these online, but you can also get paper topo maps, and they're actually in some ways easier to work with, you can figure out where the watershed is and then go camp in the next watershed. You'll find an entirely different system of rocks, a different system of plants even sometimes. So we're going to a strange place, and we're going to go look at the rocks. And there's a long tradition of people, whether they think it's magic or not, collecting rocks from places that they don't live. So when I was young, we would go to Kings Canyon in California up near Fresno, and there was quartz. And I was 4 years old, and I found a huge, honking quartz crystal, perfect quartz crystal, just laying on the ground, right? And brought it home. I still have it from when I was four. It was like, whoa, there's my quartz crystal. I mean, it was so amazing. But there are other rocks, too. In California, we have a lot of jasper, many kinds of jasper. I bet there's jasper all over the world. But we are probably us in Australia are probably the two big jasper headquarters. And every jasper, if you look at it, you know where it came from, whether it's, you know, from Big Sur or whether it's, you know, from the North Coast. Every jasper is different. And so when I was a kid, we would go camping and we'd bring back all of these jaspers, and they were mementos. They were connecting us to the land, to that land, to the spirits of the land. And of course, you could look them up in a book on stones and find out what their magical property. Bringing back stones has a really long tradition. Everywhere I've lived, in the Midwest, in California, and every place I visited, like New York, people who go camping bring back rocks and often use them to line paths or driveways or to place around their flower beds. And every stone tells a story of where you were. And they are great memory stimulators, and they are great connections to the past. So they allow you to time travel. You pick up this great ochre jasper, and you go, wow, that came from the Modoc River, or wherever it came from. And so I believe strongly in using the stones around you to connect yourself to where you are. And then if it's permitted, of course, in some places it's not permitted, but if it's permitted, bring home a stone from the river. Rounded river rocks are the best, in my opinion.
That's very cool. I have crystal balls, obviously, but I haven't collected crystals or stones from campsites and places I've visited. I think this what you just mentioned is now going to motivate me to do so. Now I'm going to start a collection of rocks and crystals, but I have collected feathers. Where I've gone to various campsites, in particular because I work a lot with animal curios, feathers or something. So I have actually a collection of feathers that are all tied together, and I use them in various cleansing workings and workings to send communication and to connect with spirit. And I, of course, also gather waters. So the various places that I go, there's a difference between the water of a lake and the water of a river. And there's a difference between a haunted lake and a non-haunted lake. And so I have collected waters from various places and feathers from these various campsites I've been to.
That's great. Collecting waters is something that many people mm-hmm. do. It's a very beautiful thing to do. Another thing is collecting dirts from special places, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And another thing that is of the earth would be herbs and plants and twigs. Anything like that is something that you can use in magic, making a twig doll, for instance, whittling. Having a connection to the earth through roots. Now, of course, in many places, they don't want you digging up all the plants and taking them home. It's forbidden. But in some places, you know, well, maybe you can. There's a lot of them. I used to collect acorns from all the different kinds of oak trees. We have lots of different kinds of oak trees out here in the West. And I had a whole collection of the acorns
yeah.
of different species. They all symbolize to me some form of growth. Acorns, you know, are used for money growing and things like that. But it's also lovely to do spells in the woods, to put a spell under a tree to bury it. And as the tree grows, so will the spell grow. You can also use trees, of course, for disposal. So earth magic is very easy to do at a campground. Also, you can use, at the campground, you can use earth magic to leave out small offerings, maybe bring some wild bird seed and just put it out. The wild birds will be very happy. You know, they will give them a little gift. They live there. You're using their apartment for your weekend getaway. Give them a little something. And I also, but don't put out any bird seed that's going to make invasive plants. I'll be careful about that. And I also like to do with earth magic, I like to collect gravel. And I know that sounds so crazy. Like, why are you collecting gravel, Kat? Where I live, there's all this jasper. There is so much jasper where I live. And you can sit in a river or down by the beach and pick out the jasper. And it'll go down to the size of pea gravel, but it'll all be tumble polished. I'm looking at my collection of jasper right here as I'm talking. From Jenner Beach in California. There are these, because of the weight of it, when streams come down the river, they sort of sort themselves, the material sorts itself, like the black sand is heavy and the jasper's a little lighter, and you'll get these streaks of colored stones. I always think of the card of the Queen of Cups with her colorful pebbles. And my friend Dale Wilkins, and my girlfriend growing up, she was named after Dale Evans, the cowgirl queen. Dale and I used to go down and we'd collect these fabulous little jasper tumble polish things, and we call them wish they were biggers, because if they were only bigger, they'd be museum quality jaspers. And they came in every color, and of course there were a few other things that weren't jasper that were in there, but we very carefully picked away all of the basalt and the quartz until we just had these beautiful jasper stones, and we'd bring them back by the bag, and then we would put them underwater because they were pretty, and they're just again a way of doing earth magic.
I'd like to add one of the things that I do when I'm collecting rocks from certain areas is often I'll provide something of my own. I think Miss Kat, you mentioned this too when we were talking last week, but being offering something of yours to say, like, hey, I'll be back, or I'm borrowing this, you know, thanks so much for your time and your efforts, you know, like just appreciating
yeah.
what is available or that you are taking, right? Acknowledging that you're taking something and that you will return, or that, you know, as a barter, as an exchange. I often leave a single hair per rock.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I like to keep all of the rocks that I collect in separate bowls with a post-it note at the bottom that says where they're from. Because, you know, in case
yeah.
I die, I need someone to go return those rocks. I said I'd return them. So either I'm returning them or somebody is.
Around here, people take all the beautiful jasper stones and some of their nice quartz, and they make fireplace chimneys out of them, mm-hmm. and you can tell when a home is really nicely made, it'll have all these beautiful, beautiful jasper rocks. Now, of course, every place has its own rock. I lived in the Ozarks, and we had a lot of chert, and there was some really pretty chert, and we also had limestone concretions, and some of those were amazing, big old round rocks. And of course, up in the northern Midwest, they have the glacier remains and those boulders, which we don't have down here. So those are all things that are part of earth magic, connecting with the earth. But really burying things under a rock, that's a good way to work. If you find a big boulder and can leverage it up and bury what you want to bury under it and slide the rock down in place again, that's not going anywhere. It's buried. Mm-hmm. And some people prefer that to a graveyard. They don't want to bury it with the dead. They just want to bury it, and that's a place to bury it, and the rock will take care of it for you.
Mm.
So
burying at the roots of a tree.
At the roots of a tree, that's right. Now, the next one is air. And when talking about... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm saying it's a perfect segue, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say air. We think of air being like just the wind that blows. And one thing you can do, of course, is things that you want to dispose of that you've burned to ash, you can go up on a promontory where the wind is blowing and cast it to the wind. Make sure you don't throw it out. It'll come right back in your face. You got to throw it up, okay? just telling you, if you've ever made that mistake, don't do it again. So air is also signified by the leaves of trees. And you could tie prayers to trees or make wishes on the leaves of trees. So what do you have to say about that one, Miranda?
We were kind of saying, like, certain trees are known for fluttering in the wind. So like aspen, birch, walnut, ash, those are really common in certain areas, depending on what kind of area you're in. But it's one of those things where, like, if you are going to bury some spell remains or a spell work there, maybe it can help whisper that out into the world and help you with that. Or you can make your wishes or prayers and wait and listen to that kind of the whispering sound that they make just to hear messages too. There was also, we also talked a little bit about, like, in addition to the leaves of those trees, the twigs and using them to douse was something that was really cool. If you wanted to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you are a dowser, nothing beats a fresh-cut Y-fork dowsing rod. That's the best. And it's a good place to practice your dowsing because you're on pretty much unknown ground. And if you want to develop your psychic sensitivity, dowsing on unknown ground with a freshly cut Y-shaped twig is really good. Also, there is a form of divination where you make little twig arrows and cast them into the air, and the way they fall is the way you'll go. And I've known people who've done that. I can tell a story about my mother who was playing with her cousins and they lost something or other, somebody's ring or something, and they had read. And Native Americans did this. They were in Germany, by the way, here in pre-Hitler Germany, but they'd read a book about Native Americans and that they threw these four arrows or four feathers into the, arrows with feathers on the end of them. So they spent the afternoon making these little arrows, just they'd read that in a book, and they threw them into the air. My mother was the only one. She could throw them into the air. They followed the feathers, and they found the lost ring. My mother was celebrated for her psychic ability ever after. So those are things
Belly
you can...
Mancy.
Yes, right, Bellomancy, exactly. Yes. And so this was something you can teach to your children, and I've done it. Taking children out camping, teaching them divination in the woods is really great, and the air is a sortilege mechanism, you might say, and also reading clouds can be done in the air, teaching children how to read clouds and reading them yourself and reading the weather. That's a very strong form of magic.
The clouds you're going to see out in a campsite is completely different from the clouds you're going to see in a city. Like, just prepare yourself. It's a completely different experience to be able to see that clear sky, to see actual cumulus clouds, to be able to see shapes. Because especially if you're living in a very high, dense urban environment, the clouds that you encounter are generally sort of this haze. They're not always distinguishable, but it's not always clear. For those of us that live in Orange County or in Los Angeles, you most, and that's kind of it. We don't feel like all the clouds. That's a very different experience, and that type of that's where you're going to be able to do that beautiful cloud divination. But there's also, in addition to divination, wind magic and air magic, hanging things from trees is very traditional and global folklore, but especially in hoodoo. If you want to really mess someone up, their doll baby hung from a tree upside down from their ankle, like the hanged man in the tarot, is an incredibly powerful way of working with the wind out in nature. Also very old school, hanging bottle spells from trees, very old school.
That's right, hanging bottles is from trees. And, of course, the hanging of dolls in trees is multicultural. And there was a movie called The Blair Witch Project in which that is part, there's a little doll hung in the tree, and people, So it definitely goes back a long way. If you have made a doll of somebody and you've worked with that doll and you're ready to dispose of that doll, and it's an enemy doll, sure, you could bury it under a rock, but you could also hang it from a tree, and that's a really good way to get rid of it in a campground where no man owns the land. It's just they're sent to the outer darkness with that one. Now, fire, of course, we think of campfires. And So not every campground has a campfire permit available, but how about, Miranda, you talk about campfires?
Oh, this is my favorite part. And now that I'm back in the Midwest, we don't have as many fire restrictions. That was something that was really hard living in California sometimes. But it is one of the things that you can even do in a park. You don't even have to go camping. A lot of city parks have grills, barbecue grills that you can do things on, but there's a lot of visibility there. So that's why camping, if you have that option, it's great. I feel like when it comes to the fire, as I said earlier, it's like the original TV. It's the gathering spot. It's a really big focus of the whole trip. What's great about a lot of the fire pits at campgrounds is that they do have a grill on top, so you can continue to do you're not just like cooking on the coals. You can cook above the coals. You can do some amazing covert magic cooking while you're out there. Sneaky tricks to feed your campmates and things like that. There's a way that you could, you know, discard spells. Like we had talked a little bit about like discarding freezer spells and spell remains that you've collected over the year. Like if you know that you need to get that work done and sorted and it fires your method, then I would say like, make sure that you do that at the end of your camping trip, not at the beginning, because you don't want to have all of those things in the fire where you
might
be. Right. But that's a really good one. When you do a freezer spell, it'll last, but eventually the water sublimates and it ends up kind of dry and mummified. And after about a year, probably best to dispose of it. If you want to do it again, do it again. But fire is the logical way to dispose of a freezer spell, either that or throwing it into water and letting it wash away. But I like fire, and I've done it with a little wax doll and just, excuse my language, just pierce that little wax doll from ass to tea kettle, you know what I mean? Just pierce it with a stick, a nice fresh stick, and melt it, roast it like a marshmallow, and it's gone. It's gone.
Yeah.
So, skewer it. So
I've definitely done that. I call it the barbecuing method.
barbecue that spell. And you can do that with cloth dolls, too. A lot of things you can do with the food that's served at the camper, of course, and that's certainly a obvious way to work sneaky tricks. If you don't have the book Sneaky Tricks by Miss McKell and me, check it out. But we talk a lot about food, and also in the book Hoodoo Food, which was written by a whole bunch of us together collectively, and that has spells that use food, and many of those can be adapted to campfire food. And one of the nice things about campfire food is that you're preparing it in front of everybody. Everybody's, but what goes into it can be a little secretive. That's all I'm going to say. But people will share food at a campfire, whereas if they're all working in an office, they go, no, thanks, I don't want any of that. But if it's what they got at the campfire, they'll eat it. And so that's a good way to get them to eat it. So
if you can bring, bring your own homemade chocolate. To make s'mores. Chocolate's pretty easy to make. You homemade that chocolate, pray over that when you're adding in your sugar to the cacao, pray over that to sweeten everyone, and then everyone gets together around that campfire to make those s'mores, and they take that homemade chocolate. And you could brag about it, too. You could be like, oh, I made this chocolate at home. And they're going to love that. Here you go. You've sweetened everyone to you. I love working with foods at the campfire, but fire in general is just amazing. Throw a little bit of eucalyptus onto your fire, and that will ensure not only that the bugs won't come around you, but it will also remove any nearby camp people that might be a little bit of a birdsome. It's not a hot spell. It's not a cursing spell, but it has a really good protective component so that if you're in a campsite, the other campsite around you all sort of gets along. It ensures sort of good neighbors along those lines. You can just toss a couple of eucalyptus. If you want to really curse someone, take the vinegar jar or an egg spell that you have fixed and throw that into the fire and let it burst and break. And whew, the effects of that are going to be real powerful.
And another thing is natural incenses on the campfire.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
There are plants that have natural scent that are natural incenses. You can certainly bring some along with you, something like pine pitch or frankincense or myrrh or even a spond. You can also put down some incense powders into the campfire. That's a good way to go. Now, we still have water, so let's quickly jump to water.
All right. I was saying earlier that water is usually like the feature of a park or a campsite. Like everyone is, trying to focus on where that beauty is, that, and the thing that allows us to really just enjoy the space beyond just the hills and the mountains. So for me, I feel like when you go camping, there's often a really great opportunity to go on a hike or something that's near a stream or maybe even a river if you're lucky enough. And this is great places for you to, again, cast off your stalwart there. But also, there was something that we had talked about, lifting a curse. Ms. Kat, if you want to go into that.
You've got to remind me what it was.
Oh, sorry. It was lifting a curse. It was like, if you're going camping, you might already have a pocket knife with you.
One. Oh, yes. Thanks for reminding me. Yes. So there's a very old, she took notes. I'm just running on on my brain power. There are a lot of spells of disposal in river water. You can dispose of people by throwing them their little doll down in the river and letting it go down. But to get rid of a curse on your sexual nature, it's very common to buy a pocket knife, take it down to the water, and split your pee stream on it. You can be male or female, you just pee, and so the blade of the knife is upward, and you split your pee on that, throw the pocket knife away for some other camper to find, I guess, and turn around and don't look back. That's something you probably won't be doing anyplace else. Another thing you can do, if you like to do those black walnut spells in the middle of the night, when don't want your neighbors watching you running around naked in the backyard, you can probably do a black walnut spell out in the campground as well by getting some water, bringing it to a boil with the walnuts, and then pouring it over yourself in the night. So another thing to do is to look for the celestial bodies. Acquaint yourself with the constellations. Acquaint yourself with the planets. Do your research before you go. Don't say, that must be a planet. Look it up first before you go. If you're out in a place that has Wi-Fi, I'd recommend you turn it off. Make yourself a little star map of what you expect to see, and then go out and look for it. And then think about how big the planet is. It's a big, big sphere, and you're somewhere on it. Visualize yourself on it. Helps if you lie on your back and sort of look into outer space. And then think, where's the sun? Where's the moon? Where am I? And that will help set your circadian rhythms, and it will set your astrological calendar, if you know what I mean. You'll be able to see. If you go out into nature at night regularly, you'll always be aware of what's happening in the sky and how astrology affects us.
Awesome. Very good. I was also going to add some of the things that happen when we're at the campground. Pouring of libations was something that you had mentioned, Ms. Kat, but just one of those things where when you're there camping, whether that's or at a daytime in a park, it's about pouring out a little bit of whatever you're drinking and enjoying with your friends to honor earth spirits that are around you and others around you, maybe even spirit, and also sharing and leaving some of your food behind if it's safe to do so. Just, you know, as a offering to actual animals in the vicinity.
Right. And please don't take plastic bottled water in with you. At least put the water in a glass jar if you can't drink safely from the water source that's at the campground. Plastic bottles are the ruination of our planet. Just don't do it. Just say no right now. Say, I heard Kat on the radio, and I just said no to plastic water bottles, and you'll be better off for it. And so bring your water in, but don't take your water home with you. Leave it out for the animals. Place it somewhere. Make a little puddle. Some insect, if you may think that life only consists of large animals like moose and deer and wolves, but just a little dragonfly might just need a little drink of water, a little mouse, and you can leave a little extra water for them. That's especially important out here in dry areas like we have where it doesn't rain all summer long. We leave bowls of water out around our property. We've got only 2 acres here, but every night you can watch on the Ring cameras. You can watch the raccoon, the possum, the 4 feral cats, which don't have names but come around every night, and they all drink from our water bowls. They all need that little bit of water.
And I think one thing I was thinking of, sorry, I don't know if we're out of time yet or not, but just some road trip planning, depending on, you know, how you're getting to these parks or how you're getting to these campgrounds, just, you know, considering safe travel spells and other protections for your trip. The other thing I would think about is wildcrafting and foraging for herbs. And actually in the red folder, Ms. Kat, you did have a long list of things that people can wildcraft for, depending on your area, but there's a lot of things like honeysuckle, pine needles, raspberry leaves, walnuts. You've mentioned that earlier. There's so many things that you can gather for free. So it's one of those things where, like, look around, see what's available, and then just, you know, having more awareness of the spell items.
Around here, there's a lot of, when you go up into the foothills of the Sierras, you'll find a lot of pine pitch on the pine trees. Break that off and take it home. Pine pitch is really good for driving out ghosts and hauntings.
Yep.
And Nagashiva mentioned, I forgot to say, the skunks. Yes, we have skunks too. And we have deer. So all of those little guys need water. But wildcrafting is really something important. And don't take any endangered plants. Don't do anything like that. But if there are perennial plants, you can break off a few leaves. No one's going to get bent out of shape with that. Be very careful that you know how to prune a tree or prune a plant before you do it. Don't just break them randomly or go in and lop them. That's not good for the plant. So you need to learn a little bit about botany and where the joints are and how to cut them. But you can take some good material that will not be missed and is common. It can be very, very common. For instance, there are places here again in California where couch grass, it's an invasive weed, but it grows so much that, you know, you're just camped out in the middle of a bunch of couch grass. Oh, my God, let's just pull up some and take it home with us, you know. And there's other things that you can find, too. Like I said, pine needles, you said pine needles, and I said acorns. Those are all good magical things to have. Buckeye nuts, if you live in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can dry them in your garage. You don't need to dehydrate them. Just let them dry naturally. Then you can sell them to the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, and we'll sell them all around the world. So there's a lot that can be done at a campground. I really want to thank
truly
you.
Truly magical fun.
Yeah. I want to thank you, Miranda, for bringing this to us. It's the right season. And all of y'all, go outside in nature at least once this summer, okay? All right.
Support.
Take it away, James.
Thank you, Ms. Kat. Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted root worker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Now let's go to the phone and talk to today's client. Our client is Miss Moody, calling from area code 631 in New York. Miss Moody, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You've indicated that you've never had a reading on this particular situation with anyone else. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And she writes, I have a fair coming up June 30th. I would like to know how it would go. Would it be financially successful? I'm doing cartomancy and selling hoodoo products like candles and baths. Should I focus on a specific product? Turning it over to you, Miss Kat.
All right. So, Miss Moody, nice to hear from you. I got a question for you. What is your sign of the zodiac?
It's Gemini.
Gemini. Ah. So, you know what I always say? Geminis can do anything. So I don't know that you need to limit yourself, but cartomancy is a great Gemini skill. And being able to sell a variety of products is in the Gemini world. But let's have Conjurman do your first reading, and then we can have Miranda follow with your second reading, and I'll do the root work.
Sure. Can I ask one quick question? When is this fair exactly? Or you can give, you don't have to give the exact date.
It's the 30th of this month.
The 30th of this month. Okay. So the reason I asked that is I always like to double check to see what the astrology of the day is going to look like. All right. You know, the sun will finally be in Cancer. You've got the Venus there. The Mars is in Taurus. Conjoined, and the moon's going to come up and conjunct it. All right. So there is some rough weather. And that is reflected in some of the cards that I have here. The first card that I have is the Ten of Wands, and the Ten of Wands indicates that there may be some element of a burden leading up into this fair. So not the fair itself, but leading up. There may be some extra prep work that might be required. It may be a little bit of a pain in the ass to actually get to the fair. When you set up your spot, you might find that there's some difficulties there. It could be something like the wind blowing your table over, but it looks like there's a bit of a annoyance that is going to be part of you setting up. Ten of Wands speaks it as a sort of heavy burden, but a burden that you can let go. And that's one of the key components, is that as you lead up to the fair, it needs to be seen as an experience and go with the flow, see what happens. Whatever comes your way is a blessing. Whether you make lots and lots of money, you make a little bit of money, it is meant to be a blessing. So take that blessing, because when you take it in that approach, it is transformed from being a burden into something more meaningful. And that's what we see in the next card, which is the Three of Wands. So from the Ten of Wands to the Three of Wands. The Three of Wands shows us a person who has invested a little bit, and they're now waiting for their investment to come. It's an individual standing on a hillside with three staves around them, and they're looking off into the distance, waiting for sort of ships to arrive. This is an indication that if you change your approach to this, if you come at this and recognize that as the weeks lead up to the 30th, and as you start to see things get a little bit stressful, you might start to feel a little bit emotionally drained, you might feel a little bit exhausted, you may even feel anxious, and certain things, just little details that will start to pile up and pile up and pile up and become burdensome for you. If you instead sort of shift your orientation, shift your thinking and go, anything that comes my way, a little bit, you know, no matter how difficult, it's not a problem, because at the end, I want this experience. So, you know, some type of road opener might assist here. Miss Kat, I think, is doing your root work, so she'll know exactly what to do here to help alleviate some of that burden. When you can do that, it'll lead to the experience itself actually being very fruitful. The Three of Wands indicates that you will build something at this location that will lead to further blessings down the line. This may be that you find a patron who's going to patronize you going forward. It may mean that you build a networked relationship that you can continue to leverage or work on in the future, or it may mean that you build a client base. But something will happen at this festival or fair that will plant the seeds for future investment. And the outcome of that is incredibly, incredibly positive. We have the World card, which shows us a woman that is successful and victorious at the end, surrounded by the four symbols of the Gospels.
Uh-oh, have we lost Conjurman? Have we lost me?
Oh, no,
we're still here.
I think we've lost Conjurman, and I can barely hear anybody. What's going on?
All right. Well,
hold on.
Should we wait?
Well, let me ask Nagashiva, are we still live?
We're still live. Conjurman has dropped off. He'll be calling back.
Well, how about you go on, Marano, because he had his
he's
cards.
Back now.
He's back.
Okay. I'm back, yes. I was talking into the void and you all couldn't hear me.
Yeah, well, so we were just at the world, successful and victorious.
Yes, the world card indicates success and victory, and that the answer is yes, you will make money here. So there is a little bit of a burden leading up, but the outcome is very good if you're able to kind of do some road work and some shifting in your mentality, be open to the blessings that will come your way, and know that it will actually lead to future investments and opportunities in the future you may see actually later in the year. So overall, a good reading. A little bit of a rocky road, but an end that is positive. And I'm going to turn this over to Miss Miranda, who will do your next reading.
Hi, Miss Moody. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Is this fair outside or inside?
It's outdoors.
Okay. Because my cards are saying there's potential for rain here. So I'll go through the cards. I have a very similar positive take on this, but it is showing me a little bit of like some interesting things to plan for. So do you have a tent?
Yes.
Okay, great. So I'm going to do a three card. Three cards is like my main reading. The first card is give me a card about the situation. The second card is what do you need to know about it? The third is what do you need to physically do? And I pulled three additional cards because of the card that I got on the physically do part. So the first card I got for you, which is about the situation, is Wheel of Fortune. Like, how fortuitous. What a great name. When you're like, how good is this fair going to be for me? A Wheel of Fortune is always, to me, a positive sign. Things turn in your favor. It's a perfect card for the question that you're asking. Like, the sky's the limit. There's so much possibility here. The second card I got, which is what you need to know and just know inherently in your being and in your core, is King of Pentacles. You got this. You are someone who grows your money, your worth, your abilities. People love to seek you out for these goods and the things that you make with your hands. So I feel very good about like your trajectory here as far as how things go. But the card that kind of threw me a bit was, what do you physically need to do? And it was Three of Swords. And that's one of the only cards in the deck that show a rain cloud and a rainstorm. So I'm a little nervous that you might be rained out. So I think in this case, having all the protection that you can, just making sure that you have stuff in plastic packets or a protective surface, or, you know, if you just really don't want to damage the products that you spent so much time building with your hands. The other thing is I asked my cards for three more cards to tell me what each one of those painful stupid swords are doing, stabbing that heart. So if you're looking at the Rider-Waite-Smith. And I got the three cards I got was the Devil, Judgment, and Two of Pentacles. And I'm kind of cracking up because I was like, give me more clarity, give me more clarity. And it's just like the devil is in the details. This is about the reality of like, it could be a great show and a very wet, rainy show. So I'm just like, make sure you have your stuff prepared. Make sure that you're able to sell your goods as best as you can. But it's going to be a bit of a balancing act. Like Two of Pentacles, it's always about like figuring out what you're going to be able to do in the time that is available for you. And if there's any ways that you can get your products in front of people quickly and safely, you might sell more with that kind of you know, with something that's protected in those kind of elements. The other thing I'll warn is that whenever I see the devil show up, I always think of someone who's trying to push their luck a little bit. Not you, Miss Moody, but that you might have some customers that might just be weird and pushy, and they might want to have a lot of, like, you know, they might want some dirtier things, some interesting things. So maybe expanding your offering to have some other kinds of work, if that makes sense.
Wow.
All right,
that was great. I would say also I'm not such a fan of the devil. I said that the devil could also be people who were under the influence of alcohol or drugs. And
right.
And so they might be troubled people. So just be aware of that. In other words, don't put everything out without making sure that the valuable things are not being stolen. Maybe have some sort of security.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And with going on, things get really chaotic. So, like, again, the fact that the card Judgment also came up, I'm like, you know what? It's about you versus these situations, this very specific situation. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So, taking all of that stuff and trying to put together a spell out of it, one thing I'm going to say is you do have a tent. Now, many tents have some sort of, you know, they have corners, they have something. I'd like you to put something in the corner of each tent, sew it in or tie it in, safety pin it in, something for protection in each corner of the tent. Depends on the design of your tent, but you know what I'm saying. Do you understand what I mean, Miss Moody?
Yeah.
It could be a small amethyst crystal, for instance, to keep away poisoned people. It could be also a little bit of money drawing. You could make almost like a tiny little mojo packet, maybe for protection and for money drawing, and put it in the corner of each tent. They won't have to see it. It would be on the inside near where the poles go, if that's the kind of, you know, tent you have. And I would do that, and I would sense the space that you're going to be in. Once you set the tent up and you have those little things in place, I want you then to literally walk the four corners of your space with incense. Now, some people use sage. I hate it. I can't stand it. It just makes me want to run screaming, which maybe means I'm some sort of horrible ghost. I don't know, but I can't take it. But I would use some sort of incense that is pleasing to you. I mean, for me, it would be something with a more flowery scent, or maybe a clean frankincense with a little bit of a gummy myrrh. I love that combination. And but whatever you're going to do, I want you to sense area. You're going to claim it for yourself. Then if this is outdoors, so is it on ground or is it on concrete?
It's on ground. On ground.
On ground. Okay, so I want you to dig at the center of your tent. Now, you got to, I'm assuming you have a square tent, right? At the center of your tent, just pace it off, you know, right where the center is, I want you to dig a little hole. And there, I want you to bury a money drawing packet of some sort. You can put in a piece of pyrite. You can put in pyrite, lodestone, and magnetic sand. You can put down some coins. But I want you to make what's called, by anthropologists, a sacred deposit. And that is going to be it on the ground, and then you're going to put your tables out. Now, wherever your tables go, they might go in front of that, or you might have them in a U shape or whatever, but that thing is at the center. Now, if you absolutely can't, due to the way the ground is configured, put it at the center of the front of your tent. In other words, if you consider your whole tent open at the front, put it at the center of what would be the door. But really, it should be a quincunx, and it should be at the center. Okay. So now you have prepared your tent. Now you got to prepare your tables, right? By the way, I'm not telling you anything I haven't done myself, and it's worked for me. So this is just strictly comes from experience. So now you have tables. Do you have any kind of a covering for the tables, like cloths, or are they just going to be bare? Okay. So your cloths for the tables. Are these cloths washable, or is it just plastic?
It's washable.
Good. Okay. If your cloths are washable, like old used sheets, something people use colorful sheets, or they'll just use yardage. I tended to use yardage because I didn't want to be seen stupidly using sheets. It just looked so, it was too personal. So I wanted to just buy, I just bought nice yardage and I'd put it out. If you can, if it is washable, if it's not, you're going to spray it and you're going to wash it with money drawing herbs. You can buy money herbs from Lucky Mojo, for instance. You can make your own. You know, since you're making products or selling products, you certainly know what I'm talking about. Any kind of money drawing herbs or roots and spices. And you're going to put a little muslin bag of that in your laundry. Or you can make a tea with it and just spritz the cloth with it. So the cloth is going to be done with money drawing herbs. But among these, you're also going to want things that are used to attract attention. So not just money, but like attraction products or look me over products. In fact, I like a combination of three of them, attraction, look me over, and money drawing. And you're going to spritz your cloths. Then those products are going to be in some kind of containers, right? Baskets or bowls? What do you got? Trays?
Yes, I have bowls. I have baskets.
Little stepped platformy things?
Yeah, I have a few of those, yeah.
Okay. I want you to get, again, some oil. If those things are made of natural fibrous material, such as wood or basketry, you're going to take a little bit of oil, and you're going to wipe them down. Again, attraction, look me over, money drawing, and you're going to wipe the inside. If the bowls are brass or something, you can't really put as much oil, and you've got to be much more careful not to put oil in. Some people will use an alcohol-based product on brass because it doesn't get gummy, and you might use, for instance, Hoyt's cologne, which is used to draw money. And so you're going to put that down, and then you're going to each, with every one of these that you prepare, you can prepare them at home or you can prepare them on the day, but if you have them all prepared, you're going to be praying over them. Let people see my goods, let them favor me, let them favor my goods, let them have money to spend. And you can do what I've done too. And I used bowls that had a foot on them. You know what I'm talking about? Like a pottery bowl that has a little foot around the edge, or a brass bowl, or even a wooden bowl. If they had a foot, I would glue on a coin underneath or under the bowl so nobody would feel it or see it, unless they picked the bowl up and held it up over their head. There'd be a coin underneath. Do you understand what I'm saying, right?
Yes.
So, or if I had a little little boxes that make a shelf, like little steps underneath, there'd be a coin. And that coin would be a lucky coin for me, whatever I consider a lucky coin at the moment, a coin I'd found, a coin with my birth year on it, a coin that I liked the look of, whatever it was. And that coin would have been prayed up, and I'd say to the coin, as you are money, so bring money to me. So now you've created what I would call a complete spider web of attraction. Does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm talking about here? All right. And when you have that all done, I think you really have yourself set up to attract people. Remember what Miranda said, and also what Conjurman said, there may be some stress going into this, and prepare for the weather, but all seems good. All seems very good. And any products that can be dressed with oil or that can be sensed or smoked before being put out, also good to do that too if you can. Do you have business cards?
Yes, I do.
Okay, dress your business cards with attraction, money drawing, and look me over, sachet powders, and make sure everybody, even if they don't buy, everybody gets a business card. And if you have something free, you can give them, like we use fortune-telling fish at our shop. Give them a fortune-telling fish. Say, here, tell your fortune. Do something. Have something for the kiddies. If you have tumble polished rocks that are, you know, just pretty jasper, right? That every kid gets to pick out a rock, you know. So be an exciting person, you know. The tumble polished rocks are always a good attractant. And I'll tell you something too. The kid wants a tumble polished rock, and you can smile and look right at the parent and say, first one's free, second one's a dollar. And they'll buy another one. So
yeah.
I wish you all the luck in the world. Does anyone else have anything to add?
No, it's really, really good. The only thing I would add is I'm a big fan of salt and grains of paradise in a small muslin, in a small mojo bag that is hung inside of the tent, and that ensures that only good people come to your tent.
That's really good. I like that too.
Great.
All right. And again, anything you can give for free will attract more people later. I built my whole business on that idea. All right, there's our music. Here it comes. Memphis Jug Band pulling around the bend. Okay. And now?
Is that going to
do it?
You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays,
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay in syndication Tuesdays. The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield in syndication Wednesdays. And The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays 4 to 5. All times specific, add 3 hours for Eastern. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Some quick announcements about those upcoming shows on the LMC Radio Network. Monday, June 17th on Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and myself will be Miss Cat on creating fixed and prepared amulets and talismans. Tuesday, June 18th on the Crystal Silence League and Syndication with John St. Germain will be the Spiritual Church, Leafy Anderson, and Black Hawk, Part 2. And Tuesday, June 18th on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron in syndication with Miss Elvira and Phoenix LeFay will be the topic of Ask a Witch, Part 5. And Wednesday, June 19th on the Now You Know show in syndication with Professor Porterfield will be the topic of Scriptural Sleep and Pyrite. And Thursday, June 20th, at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Miss Elvira and Deb Voice will be a seasonal rebroadcast for Litha. And now it's time for our free spell segment from our special guest, Miss Miranda of MissMirandaTarot.com in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Take it away, Miss Miranda.
Hi, thank you. All right, so I decided to do a kind of a grouping of a number of things that some people all know about. But if you've gone camping in the past, I grew up a little poor, and that's just what we did as our vacation idea. But a lot of us had, you know, sweet treats around the campfire after we've had our, you know, dinner. While s'mores are super popular, I'm a big fan of campfire apples. They're something, it's essentially a baked apple in foil, but you can dress it a little bit more special. And, you know, this kind of combines a little bit of some recipe ingredients from Miss Michael's Kiss Me Now Ball from the Voodoo Honey and Sugar Spells by Deacon Millett. And it also just kind of references a lot of, you know, a common thing as far as like how campfire apples work. So you just need one cored apple, or if you wanted it to be a little bit more symbolic, you can have two. Coring the apples, a little difficult, but it's the, you know, that's the one part that is kind of important here. You need cinnamon, you need brown sugar. Both of those are helpful in love spells, as well as you can also add in additional ideas and like ingredients. You would also add in your personal concerns if you wanted to, depending on, you know, the way you're going with it. But some additions you can add are pecans for abundance and male virility, or walnuts, a little bit of salt for protection, or nutmeg to increase the odds in your favor. Those are all things from Miss Michael's recipe that you can take a look at to see if you can improve your odds here. You're going to wrap those, you're going to stuff the core where you took the core out. Sorry, my brain today. You're going to core the apples. You're going to pour in the brown sugar and cinnamon, and you just want to fill it up to the top, and then you're going to be able to wrap it in foil. When you wrap it in foil, you can also do a inscription with your fingernail on that. You can write what your petition is, or you could even do something more of like a blessing or a sigil. You don't want to puncture the foil whatsoever, though, because when these apples boil in the campfire, all of the liquid will come out and be a little dangerous. So be very careful on the foil. You just wrap these up, and then you can actually just put them directly on the coals, or you can put them on the grill. Like, you could also do this in the park, or you can even do this at home, honestly. And you just cook them until you hear the apples boil inside. That can take 5 to 10 minutes, depending on how hot your coals are. But you can take them off with a set of tongs if you have it, or stick. Again, make sure not to puncture the foil. And then when you remove it, let it sit for 5 minutes, because that sugar is going to be really hot. But the goal is, if you have two apples, or if you just have the one apple, is that you share your campmate. It's something super sweet, something warm and tasty. And if you can sit and share, your proximity to that person is even better.
Wow. That's a beautiful spell.
So good.
I've done it myself. The one thing I was always told when making these kind of apples for love is use a red apple. Although many people prefer the firmness of a green apple, but I was taught a red apple is really what's good for love. And all of these herbs that are mentioned here and the nuts are connected in some way with love, sex, virility, and so forth. You did say salt for protection, and I just want to say very little salt. You just need, you want just a pinch, because sugar tastes sweeter when you put salt in it. Nobody knows why. It just does something to our taste buds. But don't put in too much salt. And there are other herbs you could put in. You could put in a pumpkin pie spice, which has cloves and nutmeg and mace and things in it like that. That would be also very, very good. It's a great old spell. And doing it around a campfire, what a great way to work. I'm going to tell you, it reminds me of a spell that we used to do down in the Big River Beach in Mendocino, salmon in aluminum foil. And you could, you know, back in the day, there was so much salmon. You just get salmon and you'd make it. And I would, you know, put little designs in the aluminum foil. And salmon is a fish that's known for its wandering, but it's also always returning to home. And it's, of course, all fish have a sexual component and a sort of female-ish nature, even though, of course, there are many male salmon. And so doing the salmon in aluminum foil was sort of a sexy thing for us. And we would do that down on our beach of beautiful Jasper sand, and we would bake our salmon in aluminum foil. And that there's there's a spell much like that in hoodoo food about baked fish with asparagus and other things for sexuality.
I was going to add also, if you're still working on dinner, there's things with potatoes, red onions, things like that that you know, they just seem like regular foods, but if you actually bless and concentrate your cooking oil and include some of those, you know, certain herbs, that's another nice little sneaky trick. You can write inside on the foil with the oil on your hand or charcoal.
Yeah, that's really good, yeah. And I'm someone who's done a lot of inscribing of aluminum foil in my life, I'll tell you that. And nobody sees it when you're all done. It's unseen. I would do it in mirror writing so that it would inscribe itself into the fish or the potato or whatever it was. I'm just funny that way. Well, let's turn this over to James. This was a great show. Thank you so much, Branda. We got to get out of here, so let's have James give us our wrap-up, and then we'll all come back and say goodbye.
Thanks, Miss Kat Conjureman, and thank you, Miss Miranda of MissMirandaTarot.com in Minneapolis, Minnesota, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when we will have Miss Elvira of Elvira.com, that's Elvira with a Y, in Arkansas, bringing us the topic of working with land spirits. Once again, we've come to the end of another Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California. You can find Miss Kat via the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com and ConjureMan at ConjureManConsulting.com in Mission Viejo, California. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and the shows are available in archive via luckymojo.com/radioshow.html. For all of us at Lucky Mojo, I'd like to thank you for being here and invite you to tune in once again next week at this same time when you will hear the familiar strains of the Memphis Jug Band playing the Jug Band Waltz. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Thank you, Reverend James. Now, remember, I'm going to be live on the radio tomorrow on Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. And I also want to say that next week's show, Working with Land Spirits, is a great segue from this show, Campground Magic, do-da-do-da. And happy Father's Day to all the fathers, and happy Juneteenth to everyone. Because, you know, we're going to be doing an air page on Juneteenth. That's going on Tuesday. Every Tuesday on air, Tech Team Tuesdays, we put out a new page about folklore, folk magic, or folk religion, and this we're going to be writing about Juneteenth. If you don't know about the Air Pages, you can always find them by going to Facebook or Instagram. You can look up Catherine Ironwood or Lucky Mojo. The pages are listed, and you can go to the Air site and read the new page. Every week, a new page. We've got, well, we're working on 1,000 at this point. We're getting there. All right. Happy summer, everybody. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.